Fall has arrived at JCPenney, the perfect time to refresh your home. From now until Sunday, get up to 50% off select comforter sets, furniture, and the most comfortable mattresses from top brands like Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, and more. And save 50 to 60% on select sheet sets, plus an extra 15% with your coupon on select home items. Hurry, end soon. That's getting your pennies worth. JCPenney. Coupon valid 9/28 to 10/9 on select home items, furniture, and mattresses. Prices valid 9/28 to 10/1. Selections vary by store while supplies last. Fittings on regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. Some exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.
My summer officially over. Season's around the corner. It's lit. Been waiting long enough.
You are locked on Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. We're here to do another season preview podcast, and today we're going to be talking about a team that's undergone probably the most change in the entire NBA, and that is the Boston Celtics. And to talk everything about the Boston Celtics and every change that's been made over the offseason, I'm joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Celtics podcast, and that is John Corrales. John, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Good to have you back on the show, and we're going to talk about this Celtics team. And the way we start all of these shows is by talking about the additions, and it's a really long list here for Boston. But
how long of a show is this going to be?
Yeah, look, it is pretty extensive. The departures list is longer, but we don't have to talk too much about those guys. But let's start with the number one guy, the guy that came in the most recent trade, and that is of course Kyrie Irving, who came in that deal for Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Ante Zizic, and the 2018 Brooklyn Nets pick. We're not here to discuss the trade or the rationale or the thoughts behind it. We're just here to talk about what Kyrie is going to do on this team and how he is going to fit with this squad. John, does Kyrie become the number one ball handler, the number one guy like Thomas was last season?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to slide right into that role, and the hope for the Celtics is that he can contribute at that level. I mean, Isaiah had a top five MVP season. He had one of the most electric seasons in Celtics history. So the Celtics are hoping that Kyrie can kind of slide right in. They're very similar players, you know, like to handle the ball a lot, both like to shoot, both like to drive. So Kyrie obviously has his own special talents. And so I think they're hoping that playing him alongside Al Horford especially will unlock a lot about his game.
What you said about them being very similar players is something I've touched on quite a bit. Like, statistically, their numbers are just they're so the same. Like, high-efficiency field goal guys, 90%-plus free-throw players, you know, 6 assists, 25-plus points, you know, hit their threes. Everything about them is very similar. But the one difference between these two guys last season was the amount of trips to the free-throw line. And I think that Kyrie coming to Boston will actually be able to up his free throw attempts, because in Cleveland, he was dealing with LeBron having the ball. So that, you know, it reduces your drive opportunities or your chances to get to the line. And I think that Kyrie is going to be able to, and Thomas was one of the best guys at getting to the line and in terms of fantasy value from the free throw line. I think he was the number one or number two guy in free throw percentage contribution. And I think that Kyrie can get to that, because I just do believe that he will attack the rim more, and he'll have more opportunities to have the ball in his hand in that situation.
I completely agree with you. I've been saying for the past few days now that I really think that those two guys will actually flip when it comes to field goal, free throw attempts.
Yep.
And again, Al Horford is the key. In Cleveland, when Kyrie was running pick and roll with Tristan Thompson, and more than LeBron, I think this is where his free throw attempts really suffered. Running pick and roll with Tristan Thompson, Thompson doesn't shoot beyond 5 feet. Thompson is a roll guy. Strictly roll guy. And what that did was it forced Kyrie into a lot of mid-range jumpers. When the big slid over to cut off the lane, the guard went over the top, and Kyrie just settled for jumpers or alley-oop attempts, or he just swung the ball around. And Thompson would either dive to the basket looking for a pass, looking for an alley-oop, or looking to get an offensive rebound, which is one of his elite skills.
Yep.
Now you put in Al Horford. Well, yeah, Al Horford is really good at the pick and roll. He recognizes when it's time to roll. But the added dimension, obviously, with Horford is he's a pick and pop guy. He took a lot of threes last year. Look at his shot chart. It's sprayed all over the floor. He'll go into the corner. He loves the above the break three. Now you can't guard Kyrie the same way. If the big slides over to cut off the lane, Horford's going to pop out. So you have to respect that. That's going to open up driving lanes for Kyrie Irving. The net effect is going to be more drives, more free throws when he gets fouled, more assist opportunities to Al Horford, which means fewer mid-range jump shots, more assist opportunities when help dives in from the corner. So his assist numbers will probably go up a bit. His free throw attempts will probably go up a bit, and his efficiency will probably go up a bit because he's not taking those mid-range jumpers as much.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I've got his assist numbers going up a bit. I've got his free throw attempts going up a bit, and I've got his true shooting percentage going up a bit in the projections over at Basketball Monster. And I've got him as a guy that's basically at the end of the first round, like pick 12, pick 13. It's him, Chris Paul, John Wall, and Damian Lillard who are all in that zone. It really depends on what you want and how you want your team to look. But any of those guys could be taken between 11 and 14, really, in that zone. And people say, oh, yeah, but his efficiency is going to dip significantly. I don't think that'll be the case. Yes, yeah, playing with LeBron does help, but you know, Gordon Hayward's a pretty good player. You know, Al Horford's a pretty good player. There is not going to be just triple teaming on Kyrie all the time. There are other good players around, and he is going to remain efficient. He will get to the line more, and I do think that he takes a step up. But I've got him like as number 13 at the moment. But we remember the first year that he played with LeBron in Cleveland, he was the 9th ranked fantasy player. So it's not like this is an egregious jump in his value and that he won't be able to do this, because he did it playing alongside LeBron James in that year when they went to the NBA Finals. So he's definitely got a chance of doing this. And I really like Kyrie this season. And I think that he's getting marginally undervalued. And pick 16 on Yahoo, it's okay, but I would go a little bit earlier. But he's definitely in that start of the second, end of the first round range. Let's talk Hayward now, John, because he did come across earlier, of course. He slots into that starting small forward role. He had a fantastic season last season. Now, before this trade went down, I thought he was going to cop a little bit of a hit. I still think he maybe gets a bit of a hit, but with everyone sort of departing in this Irving trade, I think we're going to see a lot of the same sort of Gordon Hayward we saw last season, probably a 20-point scorer, handling the ball on the wing, get his rebounds, hit his threes, get his steals, and be efficient. I don't think you'll see a massive amount of difference different from Hayward this season as opposed to last season.
I agree with that. I think he might have a few more catch and shoot opportunities, but the one thing about Hayward in this current Celtics iteration is that I would expect him to be staggered with Kyrie Irving, which means opportunities with him on the floor without Kyrie, which means he'd probably be either the primary ball handler or he'd be playing off of Marcus Smart, who's probably the backup point guard. So he'll have the ball in his hands a lot. He might have opportunities to drive and score and maybe pick up a couple of extra assists. But I can't imagine in this form that he's going to be going off and doing anything way over the top. I think you can expect maybe some incremental improvement with a couple little areas that might improve a little bit. Like I said, the passing. He might get a few more touches against second units, which means he might get fouled a little bit more. But I don't expect a dramatic uptick like in the Kyrie free throw attempts. I just think a little incremental improvement, which when you look at what the Celtics need and what they're going to want from him, they're going to ask him to do a lot. So I wouldn't expect him to rise too much in the fantasy rankings.
Progressive presents Mind Flowness with Flo.
Before you lies a beautiful meadow. In that meadow, Progressive Direct has placed its auto insurance rates alongside those of competitors. You select the lowest rate and feel a great sense of calm. A great sense of...
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates so you can rest easy. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
He is a guy that I've got projected a little bit less scoring and a little bit more assists. So basically, in line with what you're saying there. And weirdly enough, this is a guy like, and I'll say that he's like overrated in fantasy. I can say that he's got bust potential because ESPN and Yahoo drafters are getting him at 23 and ESPN and 25 on Yahoo, which is baking in for him to be better than what he was last season and better than what he was the year before, where he was the 33rd and 40th ranked player, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me that you're going, all right, I'm expecting Hayward to be significantly better than what he's been the last two seasons. I just don't see the room for growth there. If he falls into the 30s, it's a great pick, but taking him at the end of the second round, I just I don't see it. I don't understand why we're expecting a player like Haywood to have a massive... And at the top of the draft, you know, jumping 10 spots is a big improvement. It takes a bit to get to there. And I just don't see how he's going to take that big step forward to be that guy that you take at pick 24 when you're probably 35 is about the right zone. So, yeah, I'm probably not going to end up having him on any of my teams and he's going to get drafted way higher than I want. But it is an interesting thing that they just think that he's just going to be better for whatever reason that is. I'm not sure what the thought process is there. The other guy that came across in another separate trade, and that was the Marcus Morris for Avery Bradley trade, of course, that is Marcus Morris. And John, I think we have to assume at this point that Morris is going to be the starting power forward for this team.
That's my assumption, that he's going to be kind of, he's going to be playing alongside Al Horford, which now you look at the starting lineup, you probably have Jaylen Brown in there as well. So Morris, one of the things he's going to be asked to do is spread the floor. So he's going to be in that catch and shoot opportunity. He's going to be playing a sort of Kelly Olynyk role from last year. And I would expect a ton of 3-point attempts from him. And occasionally he can slide over in a small ball situation and maybe play the five. But I would expect him to be kind of a catch and shoot stretch four, primarily for the Celtics.
We've seen Morris in Detroit the last couple of seasons, and people who listen to this show regularly will know what I'm going to say here, that he requires so many minutes to actually even be a barely passable fantasy player. Like in 2015-16, he played 36 minutes a game and was the 115th ranked player. He played 33 last year and dropped to 155th. So there's absolutely no way that I can see him becoming the player who is getting drafted at pick 118 on ESPN. That means he's going to have to do what he did for Detroit in 2015-16 and play 36 minutes a night. And he's just not going to see the usage. He's not going to see the minutes. There is absolutely no chance that I want anything to do with Marcus Morris at that spot in drafts. I see very little upside in him. He's just a guy that, yeah, he'll take those threes, but he's just such a small contributor in assists, in steals, in blocks. He's not a very strong rebounder. He's not a good efficiency guy in either of the categories. He's okay, but he's below average in true shooting. He's not going to score a bunch. That is, it just seems a nonsensical pick to be picking him there when there's zero upside and, you know, probably 10% chance he even gets to that level of that pick. So I don't understand that one for Morris. Yeah, he will start. He'll do what he needs to do. But in terms of racking up stats, he goes to a significantly worse situation, and he was bad last year in Detroit. So I just don't see that improvement happening. They brought over Aaron Baines as well. I thought that before the Kyrie trade, there was a chance that maybe they might start Baines and play him the Amir Johnson, 18 minutes a game. It doesn't appear like that's going to be happening now. But for a team that, and we all know that the Celtics struggle with rebounding, John, that Baines can come in and do that and do it really well and provide some rim protection. So he's going to be a key piece for this team, but the minutes aren't going to be huge.
I would be surprised if they're more than 20,
I agree,
25 minutes a game tops. You know, the one thing with him and with Morris you got to watch for is if Al Horford gets hurt, that changes the game a little bit. But in a healthy scenario, I think Baines gets spot starts against maybe teams that have big burly centers. You know, maybe he starts against Cleveland because Tristan Thompson has been a bad matchup for Al Horford, you know. So maybe in those situations he gets spot starts, but what's he really going to contribute statistically? He's going to grab some rebounds here and there, but he's certainly not going to be a big time scorer. He's going to get some overflow offense. He's going to get some putbacks, but you know he'll fill a nice role for the Celtics, who lost a lot of toughness. But fantasy wise, none of that really matters.
No, look, he's going to be that guy that, and we've seen it, back in San Antonio when John's just jumping on his Harley there and driving away.
Yeah.
back in San Antonio, when Duncan would sit, he'd come in and he'd get like a low-end double-double with one or two blocks. When Drummond was out, he'd come in and you'd rely upon him, because what he is he's fantastic shooting, like 53-54% from the field, maybe higher, an 80% free throw guy, which is fantastic for a big man. So on those nights where Horford is out, or if Horford gets injured like we had him with a concussion last season, if Baines has to start games and play 26 minutes a night, you're getting 10 and 10 at least with 1.5 to 2 blocks and really good percentages. And as a short-term guy, like maybe Horford misses 2 weeks, like Baines will have value. We've seen it everywhere that he's gone. Whenever he moves into that role, he will have DFS value. He will have seasonal league value in that situation, because he is the unquestioned backup at center there. And he will just do what he does, and he consistently does it at that same level. And we've just seen that year in and year out from Baines. I think he's a great pickup for this team. The other center they did bring across was Daniel Theiss, the German League Defensive Player of the Year last season. I think it's going to be a stretch to expect him to be a big contributor this season, but they do need those big men, or big men depth, because that is the problem with this team. So what have you seen of Theiss that gets you mildly interested, or maybe you've seen nothing that you like?
Well, I mean, I see a guy who's got the potential to step in a year or two. And, you know, once Morris is gone and once Al Horford, whatever happens with Horford, his contract is up. But I think they're looking to him as a guy who will grow into a role. Now, the one thing about him is they don't have a lot of size. They don't have a lot of toughness.
Yep.
And he's a guy right now who's playing in the Eurobasket. He's doing well. He's got professional experience in a top league. So he's not coming in like any other rookie. And so I would not be surprised if we get more Theiss than expected. But is it enough to provide any sort of impact statistically? I think they might lean on him every once in a while, almost like they did with Gerald Green last year in a different role. But he can get a bunch of DNPs, and next thing you know, he's starting. Yeah. And he gets in there and gets like 20 minutes and contributes. Maybe he has a stretch where he gets people excited and you see people pick him up on a knee-jerk reaction, and then he sits down again. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's the type of season that he had, but I don't think he's going to get a ton consistently. But I still don't have a good read on him yet, because that bench for the Celtics is still a big question mark. A lot of young guys, don't know how a lot of guys are going to shake out. If he kind of draws on that European experience, that Eurobasket experience, it kind of rises above, he might end up being a guy that gets in there and can consistently get 15 minutes a game.
The way I look at him at the moment, I like what his per 36 projections look like. Like, he could be, you know, I'm talking like 16 and 12 per 36 minutes. He's not going to get that, of course, but, you know, nice block numbers, nice steal numbers. He can step out and hit a three. He shot 34%, I believe, last season. I'll just double check that because I did have it up. 33% last season. Yeah, hit half a three a game over in Europe across 74 games. So it's a decent sample size. So he can help in that area. He is 25 already, so we're not talking about like a 20-year-old European prospect. So he's sort of getting to his area of prime. But yeah, I think he is an interesting guy to watch if he moves into that backup role. Then at some point, if Horford gets hurt or Baines gets hurt, he can produce similar to Baines at a decent level in limited minutes for those people in deeper leagues, which I think is important. Shane Larkin, do you think Shane Larkin makes the final roster?
Well, I mean, right now, yeah, I think he has a good chance because with all the players that they lost, they still have an open spot.
Yep.
When they signed him, they had 16 players. Now they're down to 14. So I think he has a shot at making it. If there's any sort of injury in the point guard position, they're going to need somebody to get in there, somebody with experience. Because if for some reason Kyrie goes down, I don't know if they're going to look to Terry Rozier to be the backup point guard behind Marcus Smart. Smart slides into that starting spot, and they're going to need some depth. So I think Larkin is there for insurance.
I really like Larkin. I couldn't believe he couldn't find an NBA job last season. I think that he's a decent backup type player. He's obviously going to be probably fourth string at this point on this team, but he's always someone to watch who can get steals in bunches and not a bad assist guy. The shooting can be a concern, but I think it's a good pickup just for that insurance. One of the guys that I think everyone's interested to see is the dancing bear, Gershon Yubesele, who comes across after being drafted in 2016, played in China last year. You can look at his Chinese stats, they're out of control, but pretty much everyone that plays in China, because of the pace there and the talent discrepancy between people, can put up big numbers. But John, when he played for Maine last season, I thought he was relatively impressive there. And as we've talked about, the depth of big men on this team, like, he could be finding himself as the backup power forward from night one, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, he's in that mix. It's him and Semi Ojeleye. We're kind of trying to figure out how that all shakes out. This training camp's going to be really interesting for those types of guys. Yeah, Yabusele could easily get into a prime backup slot and get himself 20 minutes a game. I liked what I saw in Maine. I liked what I saw in Las Vegas in the summer league. You know, he's a guy who could step out and shoot the three, but he's strong. He and Ojeleye are very similar types of players. I actually like Ojeleye better.
Okay.
And I think Ojeleye might step up into that role, that backup 3-4 guy. He's just, I've heard Brad Stevens mention Ojale specifically and not Yabusele. So I think Ojale is ahead right now on the depth chart.
That's the way I've got it as well. I think that Ojale is ahead there and he'll play more minutes and more games. Yabusele's got an interesting fantasy game. Despite playing, you know, in my projections, I've got him playing, you know, less minutes than Ojale. He comes out significantly ahead of him. Just, I think it's mainly because of his field goal percentage, a more efficient player there. He can do a little bit with the ball in his hands. But yeah, I don't think we're going to see a huge amount of Gershon this season, but he's a guy to watch for deeper leagues and dynasties. But I wouldn't be putting a massive level of trust or level of faith in him figuring it out and becoming a, people always love to compare him to Draymond Green. It's not a good comparison at all. Can't pass like him, can't defend like him. I guess it's just because they've got a similar body type, but yeah, that don't think that this is the next Draymond Green is what I'm trying to get at, unless you disagree with that, John.
I do not disagree with that. I think Ojale at this point is more likely to become that, and I don't think he's likely to become that either.
What about the king of attacking closeouts, Abdul Nadir, who is the most aggressive player I've ever seen in attacking closeouts, and the last two summer leagues he's been really, really good at it. He played for Maine last season, was you know, solid, and he gets himself on the Maine roster this season. And we've talked about this, you know, Ojale, Yabusele, you know, these small forward, power forward types. And Nader could fill a role, but I think that he's going to be spending the majority of time with Maine again this season, unless, you know, Morris gets hurt or Ojale and Yabusele don't work out. Nader has shown way more than I anticipated for him when he was drafted.
Oh, me too, by far. You know, last summer, he kind of stormed onto the scene at the end of the summer league when he became this kind of like you said, attack the closeout, hitting the threes, just this big scoring wing. And you're like, whoa, where did this come from? And he has shown that ability to do it, but he has only shown it at the summer league and the G League level now. So I don't know how that's going to work out in the NBA. And so I don't see him playing much, but he's another interesting guy where – when you see him against that lesser competition, he looks really, really good.
Yeah, he looks dominant.
And I kind of want to see what he's like against NBA level defenders, because I want to see if he's one of those guys that's just dominant in the G League and doesn't have that next level, or if he can take it to an NBA level.
Let's go through the players that departed. Isaiah Thomas to the Cavs, along with Jay Crowder and Ante Zizic. Not that Zizic ever played a game for the Celtics. Avery Bradley to the Pistons, Kelly Olynyk to the Heat, Amir Johnson to the Sixers, Jonas Jerebko to the Jazz. Gerald Green is currently unsigned. Tyler Zeller was just signed by the Nets. James Young is somewhere. Do you know where James Young signed on, like, a training camp deal?
I want to say he signed a training camp deal with Milwaukee.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. Jordan Mickey's gone to the Heat and Demetrius Jackson's gone to the Rockets on a two-way deal. So you can see the amount of turnover this team has had. But let's talk about another player that comes in for his first season, and that is Jason Tatum, the number 3 pick in the NBA draft, who had some pretty impressive moments in Summer League. But I have my reservations about that, John. You can set me straight if you want. But I just think that a lot of what he was doing in Summer League, he was scoring a lot. The NBA players, you know, they all love him because they love players who take and hit contested long twos. And that seemed to be a lot of what Tatum was doing. And it doesn't feel like it's sustained. If he's not, I don't think he's going to be able to build his career on contested long twos. Tell me something different. Like, did you, like, the numbers that you put up in Summer League, do you think, oh, wow, this is fantastic? Or do you go, there's a little bit of fluke in some of these shots going in?
I actually was very encouraged by his Summer League performance in that the contested step back shots that he hit were not overly athletic. They were more crafty, the footwork that he used to get those shots. Now, of course, there's always the standing caveat that Summer League performance does not indicate future results. The defenders in Summer League are generally terrible, but he created enough space for himself and he created NBA type shots. He does, however, have to include a 3-point shot in his repertoire, or else he's not going to reach the potential that people in Boston hope. But the shots that he was hitting, I think, were NBA quality shots. You know, the biggest thing, the biggest mirage in summer league is that super athletic guy that dominates strictly because he's bigger, faster, stronger. And when he reaches the NBA, everybody is bigger, faster, stronger, and he can't get to the things that he was leaning on in Las Vegas. So Jason Tatum wasn't that. His success was success that I believe translates. And I think the Celtics think that it translates. And then that's kind of going to be the foundation. And then he has to stretch out his range to kind of open up the rest. You got that middle part. He's got to get that long and the short part. But he'll get minutes this year, no doubt. He'll get some opportunities, and he'll get those opportunities against second units. So I wouldn't be surprised if he has a decent year for a rookie.
He is getting extraordinarily overdrafted, probably the most egregious overdrafting of any rookie. He's getting picked at pick 98 on ESPN. He'd need to play 30-plus minutes to get to that level, and that's just not on the cards unless just multitudes of things go wrong for the Celtics. There is zero upside in picking him there. I've got him outside the top 150 because I just don't see enough minutes there for him. Initially, Stevens said that he was going to be on the Jalen Brown path. This was before the trade, so playing, 19 minutes, 18 minutes, that sort of stuff. Now, he will get a boost now that there are minutes opened up by the departure of Jay Crowder there on the wing, but I don't think he's going to be playing enough minutes for you to really consider him in any 12 or maybe even 14-team fantasy league. Maybe you want to take a flyer with a last pick. The other thing that, from a fantasy point of view with Tatum, is that, apart from scoring, most of his other categories just or feel average. Like, there's just not one. He's not a great rebounder. He's not a great passer. He doesn't block shots. He doesn't get steals. He's not hitting threes in big volume. He's not a high field goal percentage guy. He's a good free throw shooter, but everything else is just middle of the pack. So it's not like you go, well, look, he's got all these strengths that he can build on. The scoring is one thing, and that's great, and creating the shots is really important in the NBA. But when you look at fantasy, he needs to bring something else. He needs to be a more impressive rebounder, or he needs to be able to add some more shot blocking or something to his game. What sort of minutes do you think he plays this year?
That is an excellent question, and that's one of those things that we're just going to have to wait to figure out. He will probably be more on the Jaylen Brown path of getting some good minutes until he screws up, and then he's going to sit down, and then he may not play for a game or two. But if he does come out strong, then I can see the Celtics kind of trying to rely on him, because they did get rid of a lot of guys that play out on the wing. So they're going to, they did open up minutes for him. So he can stretch it out to 20, 25, maybe close to 30 minutes a game. If he's going well, I think he's probably going to average somewhere around 22 minutes a game this season.
This has been happening, and all my most recent podcasts, when I asked for these statistical projections, and I ask the guest, and they say exactly what I've got him projected. I've got him at 22 minutes a game for this season, and it's always good to have that person come in without any knowledge of what I've said and back me up on that. So yeah, I've got him at 22, and there's just no way he becomes a top 100 player in those minutes. Again, things can change, but there's just no upside in picking him that early. The other guys that they drafted, we spoke about Ojeleye already, and then they had Kadeem Allen and Jabari Bird in the second round, and both of those guys are on two-way contracts, so they'll barely play. They'll be with Maine most of the season. We might see a handful of games for them with the big team. Let's get back to your best selection. I should have touched on this earlier. He didn't play in summer league because he was dealing with a broken foot. Is he going to be ready for training camp?
I haven't heard that he's not, but yep. I also haven't heard that he is. So it's been pretty quiet. The thing about the Celtics right now is that his broken foot is just, no one even remembers that he has a broken foot.
Yeah, that's right.
Because it's been, Isaiah Thomas's hip, everybody was concerned about for a while, and then it was the trade. So I don't think anybody has asked, and the Celtics have certainly not offered a medical update on him.
Let's talk about Marcus Smart. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA. People really, and rightfully so, they criticize him for his poor shooting. He's not a guy that's hitting bulk shots, but he is a top 100 fantasy player, irrespective of his shooting, because he gets assists, because he gets steals in a high level. He's a strong rebounder. He'll still take those threes, and he'll still hit some of them. So to me, he's getting picked at 110 on Yahoo and 119 on ESPN. That's a huge steal if you can get him at that zone, because even with poor shooting, he can be a top 80 guy. And if somehow, John, if somehow he can hit 42% of his shots, then he pushes the top 50. Is there any hope? Because we see sometimes he goes out there and you go, oh, shit, like Marcus Smart can shoot now. What's going on? And then we go through stretches where it's like, no, he can't. Is there, and do you hold any hope in his fourth season of him becoming a not horrendous shooter?
I like how you put that. I do have hope. I definitely do have hope. Look for the signs, right? What are the signs that there is a good shooter in there? His free throw percentage is actually pretty good. His corner three percentage is actually not bad. So it's the biggest problem with his percentages is basically his shot selection, that he has had a tendency to take heat checks before he's even really hot.
Yep.
And so he takes way too many above the break threes. And he's also one of those guys who is not afraid to take a heave. So he has, I think, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was one of the top heave guys in the NBA last year. So that further diminishes his shooting and makes it look a lot worse than it is. I think somewhere buried in Marcus Smart's game is a pretty decent shooter, as the biggest truck in the world rolls by me. I think in there is a decent shooter. Not a great shooter. He's not going to turn into Steph Curry. I'm not going to pretend that he is. But one thing that I noticed last year is that when he had the ball and when he was playing with the ball in his hand as the primary backup ball handler, he did get more selective. His game kind of changed a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
And he played off the ball a little too much. This year, with Isaiah gone, and it's him and Kyrie, I think, and Avery Bradley gone especially, he's going to be the guy, I think, that's going to be the primary backup ball handler. He's going to play a lot of different roles, but he is going to be handling the ball a lot, which means he starts at the top of the key, passes, initiates the offense, and ends up in the corner where he can catch and shoot and actually hit a pretty decent percentage of his threes. So if he can do that and he can start taking fewer above-the-break threes, you'll see that percentage rise to a point where it's very palatable.
I've got him currently at 38% projection. I'm trying to be cautious, but I believe that he can be a 40 and a half, 41% guy, and that elevates him clearly inside the top 60, maybe even top 50 as a player. And he is getting drafted significantly late. The team loves him. I think he plays a little bit more than he did last season, maybe a minute or two more than last season. Would you say that's probably accurate given the players that have lost there with
absolutely.
Bradley gone?
Yeah.
Yep. So look, he's gonna get those steals.
Stay healthy. He'll be out there a bunch.
And I like what you said about when he did have that role last year, playing as the point guard. Like, he looked really different. He looked sensational. Because people look, he's a small forward, he's a shooting guard, he's not a point guard. And then he came in and played as a point guard, and people went, look what he can do. He's distributing, he's running things, he's doing all this stuff. And you go, he is fantastic in this role now.
Marcus Smart can pass the ball.
Yep.
If anybody follows me on Twitter, I will say that a million times. Marcus Smart can pass the ball. He is not known for it, but he is a tremendous passer. So if the Celtics decide to do some things, like maybe they play Kyrie off the ball a little bit with Gordon Hayward and you put the ball in Smart's hands, he's going to find you. He will get some assists that way. I'm a big Smart guy. A very big Smart guy. I think he's going to have a pretty good season. And it's a contract season.
Yes.
So he's motivated.
No, I'm big on Smart as well. And I think there's just a significant upside in picking him at that zone. Really excited to see what he's going to do. But he's not going to start at shooting guard. Like, what we're going to have is most likely Jaylen Brown starting as that shooting guard. Yeah, that's going to require him to play a lot more than he did last season. I think that most people assume that he is ready for that role. But I don't think that he is an awesome fantasy option, just because similar things I said with Tatum, he just doesn't. He's not going to score in big volumes. He's not going to be a guy that gets assists or steals or blocks in big percentages. He's going to have, or big amounts, he's going to have his field goal and free throw percentage be considerably below average. The minutes will be there, but it doesn't necessarily translate into big numbers. What's one area you think that he can actually improve his game this season outside of just getting more minutes?
I think what you're going to see from Jaylen Brown is he's going to have a lot more defensive touches. He's going to probably get more steals. He's probably going to get maybe some more blocks. They're going to look at him as maybe the primary ball handler. The primary defender alongside Kyrie. He's going to be asked, and they specifically had him playing this summer against point guards. So he's going to be a guy that's going to be asked to guard a lot of guards. He's going to be out on the perimeter. So a bulk of his minutes are going to be defensive minutes. And the scoring is basically going to be overflow, catch and shoot type of spread the floor stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's going to be interesting to see him out there. Look, the minutes will be there. I'm okay with taking him with a last pick, and that's sort of where he is in the ESPN and Yahoo average draft position at 140 in both, and that's fine. I reckon after about 2-3 weeks, you'd probably end up dropping him, but the role is there, the upside is there for it. But you know, when he was in college, the statistics never looked great. They didn't translate well to fantasy. Like his rookie season, he played well, but they didn't translate to statistically to fantasy. And I just think it's going to be more of the same. One of those guys who can get minutes, but it just doesn't turn into like a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope who plays, you know, 36 minutes a night and still can't crack the top 100 in fantasy just because of his limitations in getting certain statistical levels of production. I think Brown profiles as a guy, you're very similar to that in that sense. Terry Rozier, we know all the Twitter jokes about the untouchable Terry Rozier. He's shown a bit, you know, when I've seen him out there, a super aggressive rebounder for a guy his size, but you know, we're going to be seeing him as that third string point guard again. And I don't really see a huge room for him to increase his role this season, despite all the turnover. We've still got Kyrie and Smart there ahead of him. I just don't see Rozier starting to play 25 a night.
You know, he's another guy. I really honestly can't get a read on him and what the Celtics are going to ask of him. I have a real kind of, it's just fuzzy because they have tried him as the point guard. They have tried him as a shooting guard. He's had sometimes, like he had in the playoffs, he all of a sudden stepped up and had a pretty good performance. He has something in him that can be productive for the Celtics. The question is, well, you know, what does Jaylen Brown do as far as if Jaylen Brown is getting a ton of those minutes, how does that affect what Terry Rozier is going to get? And if Jaylen Brown has earned all that time, then Rozier is probably going to be spending more time on the bench. He has the potential in him to do some good things. He may end up having a better season than anyone expects. He may also end up having a season that's bad enough where the Celtics cut bait and get rid of him next season. So the swath of Terry Rozier's performance is so wide that it's really going to take a couple of months to get a good read on exactly what he's going to be.
People don't really realize it 100%, but he was horrendous in terms of his shooting last season. Like it was really bad. He was 36% from the field and 32% from three for a true shooting of 46%. And he was a 33% true shooting guy in his rookie season. So he has yet to show that he can shoot with any. We talk about Marcus Smart not being able to shoot. He brings a lot more to the table. Like Rozier is as bad, if not a worse shooter on this team. So there's significant room to grow there, but he is going to be in a role that is capped, I believe, this season. I don't really see a massive amount of value for Rozier heading into the year. He might crack the top 250 if he's lucky, but I think that might even be pushing it. Al Horford was the big free agent acquisition last season. He gets criticized a lot, and I hate the criticisms that come from, you're 7 foot tall, how come you can't grab any rebounds? It's not as simple as that. It's about, you know, and look, the Celtics did get killed on the boards, and you know, some of that's Horford. It's just not his game, though. He does other things. Can he, in this team that's probably gotten worse at rebounding this season, maybe the addition of Baynes helps that, can he improve that, or is his game just going to be more that pick and pop sort of game rather than that crash the glass sort of player?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to change. Al Horford is who he is, and the Celtics need Al Horford to be who he is to be successful. Going back to what I said at the start, he unlocks so much because of his ability to play further away from the basket that he's just not going to have some of the same opportunities that other guys would. He's not the best rebounder, even if he was down there, but that's not what the Celtics need. And they're certainly not the type of team that's going to be crashing a lot of offensive boards. They just need to, as a team, not suck terribly as a rebounding team. And the hope is that the added length, they did get bigger in general, that the added length will help some of those long rebounds that really crushed them last season. So I don't think they're going to ask Al Horford to do anything else that he's been doing. He's a guy that they can run the offense through, high post, pass, pick and pop, get out there, stretch the floor. His numbers are probably going to be exactly where they were and where they have been for a while.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, he was the 38th ranked player last season. I've got him projected at 42, so around that same zone. And that's why I don't understand why he's getting drafted outside the top 50 on Yahoo and ESPN, with, I guess, more reliance on him in that front court with some of the moves that have gone down. He is an absolute steal if you get him at pick 50. He's got that third round upside, and you can get him there like in the fifth round. I just don't understand why we're projecting Haywood to have a significant increase and Horford to have a significant decrease in their value. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But Horford is a great target in that third or fourth round, a consistent big who's going to play minutes and can average a triple one, who can score and he can pass and he's hitting threes. He's doing all this stuff. And we talk about, or I talk about being, you know, centers being a hard position to find because there just aren't that many who play consistently large minutes. And getting him in the fourth round is brilliant because you could be getting yourself an extra round of value there. And he's going to produce big, big numbers across the board that don't look sexy for a lot of people, but they're doing what needs to be done. And in a rotisserie league especially, his value is really, really important to this team, or to your team in rotisserie, because he just helps in every single category, which is what you want in that sort of a situation. I think we've covered every player, but I want to hear, John, who you have as your breakout candidate on this squad.
I'm going to go with Marcus Smart.
Yep.
I think he has the guy that has you're talking about breaking out. He's the guy that has the potential to do a lot. He obviously will get you a ton of steals. Everybody talks about the loss of Avery Bradley and the loss of Jay Crowder. No one on this team played the passing lanes like Marcus Smart. So he gets in there, he gets steals. He, like I said before, is a tremendous passer. He's going to get plenty of assists. And just like Al Horford's going to help with Kyrie Irving getting to the rim, I think Marcus Smart is going to learn to get to the rim a little bit more with him, with Marcus Morris setting pick and rolls. And the other thing about Smart is that he says he's lost a bunch of weight. He was playing last year somewhere around 230, 240. He's gotten down somewhere around the 220 range. So that's going to help him be a little bit quicker, turn corners, get to the rim, be a little bit more explosive, maybe attack the basket, improve his free throw attempts. If he can do all of those things and be more selective, you're going to look at a guy who's going to average a lot more points, and it's going to do it a little bit more efficiently. So I think that he's the guy that has the most potential to do a significant amount more than he did last season.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on Smart. I can't believe how low he's being drafted. There's significant upside there, this top 50 upside. Like, if he has a 42% field goal season, he's a top 50 guy. If they have to play him 33 minutes a night, he's a top 50 guy. There is a ton of value. Yeah, the field goal percentage can be harmful, and it is something that you probably have to pay some attention to, but it's not horrendous. It's not unrecoverable from. It's not Andre Drummond's free throws. It's not DeAndre Jordan's free throws. You can easily recover from Marcus Smart's field goal percentage, and he just strikes me as one of the best value guys at that portion of the draft. I also, as I said, like Horford a lot as a value player, and the bus guys I've already talked about. Haywood is just too high. I think he's fine, but it's too high. Tatum at 98 is ludicrous, and Marcus Morris at 118. There's just no chance to me that those guys are able to return that level of value. Over under, John, Vegas has gone real hard on this. 56.5 they've got the Celtics at. What are you looking at there? That's a significant increase on last season.
Yeah, I'm gonna go under on that just because of the incredible turnover. I think that they're going to struggle a little bit early. The one thing about the Celtics overall win total, it will be hurt by a very heavy front-loaded schedule. They have essentially two All-Star breaks this year because they play in London in January. They play one game in 7 days. So they have a bunch of time off before and a bunch of time off after. And in order to accommodate them going to London, they have to play a lot of their schedule in the first few months. So October, November, December, and the beginning part of January is going to be a very heavy schedule. Most of their back-to-backs are in that stretch. For a team that's really trying to get to know each other, I think some of that, they're going to have some struggles early. You'll see them pick it up later on in the season, but that's going to end up hurting their overall win total. They'll probably end up somewhere around where they were last year. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a 53-54 win season for the Celtics.
Yeah, I can say that. I think that's a pretty strong under for me as well. There's, you know, when you're only returning four players on a roster from last season, there's obviously some sort of chemistry things that need to be worked out. It is a big change from last season. So I just don't see them getting to 56. So I like the under there as well. John, let us know what you have got coming up on Locked On Celtics.
We've kind of wound down a little bit, but I got some cool guests lined up. We're going to be doing some shows in the next couple of weeks. A little bit more Celtics and pop culture, a little bit Celtics and music. So we got a lot of kind of cool guests coming up in the next few weeks.
Make sure you are checking out Locked On Celtics, and you can subscribe to that and to this podcast on Stitcher, on Apple Podcasts, on TuneIn, on Google Play, and on Spotify, and leave us a review. That would be fantastic if you could leave us that 5-star review. We'd be much appreciative of that. It is a great way of making the shows more visible and getting more people to listen across the Locked On Podcast Network. John, thank you for coming on again.
My pleasure.
We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Shane Larkin.